Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
My name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, September 17th, 2022. Labor market in full recovery mode. Tall City climbs up state rankings to third lowest jobless rate, by Mala McEwen. Midland's labor market continues to move beyond the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and move closer to the top of the rankings of the state's metropolitan statistical areas that it dominated for a number of years amid the shale revolution. The Texas Workforce Commission said Friday the unemployment rate in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, dropped to 3.3% in August from 3.5% in July and is almost 2 percentage points below the 5.2% reported last August. Odessa followed a similar path, dropping to 4.9% from 5.1% in July and well below the 7.6% Odessa saw a year earlier. Without a doubt, we are in full recovery mode, Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, adding that unemployment claims in the 17 counties he oversees have fallen significantly. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram by phone, he said all areas, the public and private sector, the nonprofits, are all hiring. Manufacturers, oil and gas companies, education, healthcare, are all needing workers. It will take time to grow our way out of this, Taylor said. What he took away from the recent meeting of his advisory board is that the members are seeking skilled workforce development grants to train their existing workforces. Also, Taylor said, the area's three colleges, Midland, Odessa, and Howard, all have students enrolled in training programs, from welding to commercial driver's license to healthcare. Education to automotive tech, diesel tech, and HVAC. Four grants totaling about $2 million were just given by the state to three local school districts, Monahan's Wicket Pyote, $700,000, Pecos Barstow Toya, $700,000, and $500,000 in Grand Falls Royalty for technical training in carpentry, welding, and automotive technology. We're trying to focus on growing our own workforce, Taylor said, as the area needs more people to fill open positions. Midland's civilian labor force held steady, inching up to 103,701 from 103,624 in July and is 877 more than last August. The number of employed Midlanders also held steady, rising to 100,248 from 99,964 in August. The number is 2,791 more than the 97,457 that was employed a year ago. The number of unemployed fell to 3,453 from 3,660 and has fallen by 1,914 from 5,367 unemployed residents last August. Midland added 400 jobs from July to August, led by 500 new jobs in the dominant mining, logging, and construction sector, which includes oil and gas. Trade, transportation, and utilities was the other sector to add jobs, rising by 100. Two sectors, professional and business services, and the leisure and hospitality sector, each lost 100 jobs during the month. For the 12 months from August 2021 to August 2022, Midland has added 4,400 jobs for a growth rate of 4.4%. Mining, logging, and construction again dominated, adding 2,500 jobs, followed by leisure and hospitality with 800 new jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities grew by 400 jobs and manufacturing by 300 jobs. The other services sector rose by 200 jobs. The financial activities sector, professional and business services sector, and education and health services sector each added 100 jobs. Government was the only sector to lose jobs during the year, down by 100 jobs. Statewide, Texas unemployment was 4.1%, up from 4% in July, the first increase since April 2020. The state added 16,400 jobs in August and has added 726,900 positions since last August. The state also set a 10th consecutive monthly record for employment highs, with total non-farm reaching 13,530,100 in August. Amarillo and Austin Round Rock had the state's lowest unemployment at 3% each, followed by Midland, and then Abilene, College Station Bryan, Lubbock, and San Angelo at 3.5% each. McAllen Edinburgh Mission reported the highest rate at 7.7%. Parents want IDEA Travis expansion. MISD board to discuss adding 9th through 12th grades by Stuart Doreen. Ask Ivafel Franco where she wants her son to graduate from. It doesn't take long for her to answer. IDEA Travis. Franco got her first taste of an IDEA graduation as officials show new parents a video that includes pictures of other IDEA students graduating, a hallmark of the school's motto that from pre-kinder to 12th grade, IDEA Public Schools is focused on sending 100% of our kids to college. The one-step-forward approach connected with Franco, as did her son's turnaround for making C's and F's to A's and B's. They do this big celebration for the seniors, Franco said. And I could see my kid. I could see us doing that. You know what I'm saying? That right there was confirmation for me that I had made the right choice in moving him from school. For Franco to have her son have that IDEA moment, it will require the Midland ISD board to approve the expansion of IDEA public schools beyond 8th grade and to 12th grade. The board is supposed to consider expansion at Monday's meeting. Franco and her son told the Reporter-Telegram they want to see that happen, and they are not the only ones. Jasmine Perez's 12-year-old son attends IDEA Travis, and she appreciates IDEA's teachers bringing the passion to learn back into her son's life. When he arrived at IDEA Travis, he was three levels below where he needed to be, Perez said. He wasn't in a good place, and now, 2 years later, he was a student of the year. That type of improvement is being seen across IDEA Travis campus. Midland ISD reported in August that IDEA's 38-point improvement from 2019 to 2022 was the greatest inside the district. Both Franco and Perez said IDEA has provided a school for families on the south and east sides, respectively. They called IDEA a community where teachers work with students and communicate with parents, and the community appears to support the school. Bethany Solis, executive director of IDEA Schools of the Permian Basin, told the Reporter-Telegram the number of students on the waiting list is around 600. I'm not the only parent that feels this way about Travis, because as soon as you sign up, they let you know the expectation, because they have an expectation of greatness, Perez said, not just from one child, but for all of their children. And that's what I love about it, because this school can genuinely say they take the kids under their wing as their own children. So if there's not enough representation of that on the school board to where they're not knowing the impact that IDEA is having, then that's concerning to me. K-12 is the IDEA model. IDEA Permian Basin officials want to see the school on Midland's southeast side moved to a K-12 model because that is typical of the IDEA education experience. Travis executive principal Haley McCarthy came to Midland to run a K-12 school. I really am excited for high school, McCarthy said. I love these eighth graders, and I'm really excited to have seen what they can do, because I think they can do some really amazing things. Solis said the IDEA experience at the elementary school levels, including the improvements when needed, is to prepare students for high school, where IDEA students can take as many as 11 AP, Advanced Placement, or IB, International Baccalaureate, courses. It's on us to figure out how to support them from where they will be successful in AP courses, IB courses in preparation, Solis said. Should the board vote to extend IDEA Travis to 12th grade, the school would serve 1,500 students from K-12. That would happen in facilities built by IDEA Public Schools, not Midland ISD. Patrick, Political Fight to Be Between Rural, Urban Areas, by Ben Schaefer. The Midland County Republican Women held its monthly meeting at the Petroleum Club on Thursday with guest speaker Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Patrick stopped in Midland during his bus tour, which is centered on getting Texans energized when it comes to voting. He said he's covering 130 Texas cities in 8 weeks and having fun doing it. That's part of this trip, to let people know how important Texas is, rural Texas, Patrick said. What I didn't expect is how much fun it is. The Senate's most powerful man spent much of his time at the podium discussing the Republican Party's impact in rural areas versus urban areas in Texas and across the country. If you think about the map right now, Patrick said, if you think of Ohio, it's all red except Cleveland and Cincinnati. Pennsylvania, all red except Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. North Carolina, all red except Raleigh and Charlotte. Georgia, all red except Atlanta and Savannah. Texas, all red except Dallas and Houston and Austin and San Antonio, he said. Patrick claimed that out of 254 Texas counties, 22 are blue counties. And Texas Democrats receive most of their votes from Dallas, Houston, Austin, and San Antonio. Patrick has confidence in the 232 mostly rural Texas counties that have high percentages of Republican voters. In 2018, those districts helped Patrick win by 5 percentage points. A Texas Politics Project poll released this week showed Patrick beating Democrat Mike Collier again, this time by 7 points. Patrick, however, doesn't just want to beat the Democrats in rural areas. That won't be good enough to compete against the sheer volume of voters in the more metropolitan areas. Patrick told those at the MCRW luncheon that he wants to decimate Democrats. The key is we have to win 75% to 25%, or 80 to 20, not 65 to 35, because people stay at home, he said. We have to win big. That's what we need to do, not box with the Democrats. We need to trample them. Patrick touched on education in the state, specifically teachers engaging in discussions involving gender and sexuality with young students. He started by sharing a story out of El Paso in which a now fired teacher told her class to stop referring to child predators as pedophiles, but instead minor attracted persons. First of all, why is she talking about that in school? Patrick questioned. He claimed most Texas schools are in good shape and most teachers are great, but politicians are not able to always keep tabs on the approximate 9,000 schools in the state. We depend on the parents and the grandparents to be our canary and tell us when they see something, because we are not going to allow this to happen to our kids in the state of Texas, period, he said. I don't want my 7 grandchildren sexualized in the first grade. It is not of that teacher's business or that school district's business to talk about gender and sexual ideas, Patrick said. I'll handle that. He said that the battle between Republicans and Democrats breaks down into 2 concepts, rural values and urban values, he said. He said that bigger urban areas are more likely to vote for Democrats, but he and his fellow Republicans are going to work hard in the state's urban areas to swing voters. We're going to fight back, but we have to have a massive turnout in rural Texas to be sure, he said. Impressive Guest List Helps China Aid Celebrate 20 Years, by Ben Schaefer. China Aid, a Midland-based human rights organization devoted promoting religious freedom and exposing the pitfalls of communist rule, held its 20th anniversary celebration at the Green Tree Country Club on Thursday evening. The event had a host of impressive speakers that described Bob Fu, the organization's founder, as a hero for all his brave work in rescuing persecuted Chinese citizens and bringing to the light the abuses and human rights violations carried out by the Chinese Communist Party. Kevin Sparks, a Midland businessman who appears set to replace Kel Seliger as the state senator for District 31, quoted the Wall Street Journal's description of China Aid. "I love what the Wall Street Journal said about China Aid. It said it's the most influential network of human rights activists, underground Christian freedom fighters in all of China," he said. He added that Bob Fu is a great scholar, theologian, pastor, and a lover of Jesus, and his bravery and dedication powers his organization. Sparks then spoke about Fu's national influence, recalling a time when Fu traveled to Geneva to speak with the Human Rights High Commission. The highest level human rights attorneys in the world work at the UN. They're Harvard trained, they're Oxford trained, and Bob Fu was so compelling to them that when we left, they formed a team and went to China themselves. The UN and they confronted China about the human rights violations that Bob brought to the table, he said. Fu spoke about China Aid's founding, which came in 2002 when he received word that five Chinese house church leaders were sentenced to death in China for their religious practices. Following the news, Fu and China Aid met with U.S. congressmen detailing the human rights violations. After the meeting with Congress, China Aid sent a team of human rights lawyers to China to defend those being persecuted. All five death sentences were overturned. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz was in attendance and spoke about the Chinese Communist Party. "Right now, the government in China practices, on an institutionalized basis, murder, torture, and persecution of Christians. Persecution of Uyghurs. Over a million Uyghurs in concentration camps today," he said. He said organizations like China Aid freed citizens in places like Taiwan and Hong Kong, and the presence of underground religious freedom groups terrifies the CCP. He detailed his trip to Hong Kong during the 2019 anti-extradition law amendment bill movement. "There were protesters in the streets. They were incredible protests, heroic protesters, many of which were kids, were teenagers, risking their lives standing up, many of them waving American flags. I saw them holding up signs with quotes from the American founding fathers," he said. Prior to the event, in an interview with the reporter Telegram, Cruz shared his thoughts on China Aid and its founder and president, Bob Fu. "Bob has been a heroic voice and a courageous voice, speaking out in support of religious liberty, speaking out in support of human rights, speaking out in support not just of Chinese Americans here, but in support of the millions of Chinese citizens facing oppression from a despotic communist government," he remarked. In the same interview, Cruz claimed the evils of communism are personal for him, as his family in Cuba was imprisoned and tortured by communist dictators. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a devout Christian, spoke at the dinner as well. He spoke about the importance of religious freedom, Chinese oppression, and the state of Christianity in America today. "We have one election cycle in 22. We have another in 24. And I think, Ted, you would agree, if we don't wake up and see the light in these two elections, your rights, including the rights that you have just always believed you would always have, will slowly but surely be taken away," he said. At the end of the dinner, China Aid's treasurer encouraged attendees to contribute to China Aid to be able to continue their valuable and life-saving work toward religious freedom in China. "The ligament that holds all of the freedoms together," he classified religious freedom. Pruitt, "Prices of $85 per barrel do not reflect fundamentals," by Mella McEwen. A darkening outlook for global economies overshadowed supply concerns, sending oil prices to their third weekly loss. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 3 of 5 trading days, but those increases could not overcome the $3.38 drop after the Department of Energy indicated it was in no rush to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Prices opened the week with a 99-cent gain and saw another $1.17 rise Wednesday, ending the week up 1 cent to $85.11, down 1.9% from last Friday's close of $86.79. The posted price closed the week at $81.59, according to Plains All American. Natural gas was also down for the week, despite starting the week with a 25-cent jump and again crossing the $9 barrier, jumping 83 cents Wednesday to $9.14 per MCF. That 83-cent jump was negated by a 79-cent fall Thursday and additional 56-cent drop Friday. Henry Hub on the New York MEX closed the week at 7.764 per MCF, down from 7.996 at last Friday's close. Current oil prices of $85 per barrel do not reflect fundamentals, but rather the expectation that global demand will be destroyed due to high oil and petroleum products prices and the global recession. Further, hedge funds and other speculators have withdrawn record amounts of trading funds from commodity exchanges, deflating a number of commodity indexes below physical prices. Steve Pruitt, president and chief executive officer of Elevation Resources, told the reporter Telegram by email. Pruitt added that with oil and petroleum products, gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel, inventories at or near five-year lows and increasing demand for all petroleum products across the globe, it's hard to explain the 30% drop in oil prices since June. Further, while natural gas trades at over $30 per MMBTU in Europe, delivered primarily as liquefied natural gas from the U.S. Gulf Coast, natural gas in West Texas sells for under $6 per MMBTU, he wrote. Given the 30% plus inflation and climbing in drilling and completion cost, U.S. oil and gas active drillers are pressured to maintain their rig counts going into the fourth quarter, since most of us fund our drilling out of cash flow while maintaining dividends and/or stock buybacks, Pruitt wrote. As a result, I expect to see flat to declining U.S. rig counts going into the end of 2022 as companies spend their budget, and a flat outlook for rig count in 2023 unless oil prices improve from current levels. In his daily newsletter, Edward Moya, senior market analyst, The Americas at OANDA, wrote, "This was a good week for oil prices as global growth fears appear they won't be going away anytime soon. It is just bad news on the crude demand side from both the U.S. and Europe, while skepticism remains elevated that China will have a smooth reopening." Moya noted that while Baker Hughes reported an 8-rig rise in the oil rig count to 599, that is still shy of pre-pandemic levels. The oil market is losing its tightness, and that will likely continue if central banks worldwide remain aggressive with fighting inflation, he wrote. Next week, he predicted energy traders will be paying close attention to both the Federal Open Market Committee decision and China's detailed trade data that might show demand for energy is weakening. Man arrested on aggravated assault against public servant charge by Mercedes Cordero. A 32-year-old man is facing three aggravated assault against a public servant charges following his arrest on Wednesday, according to court documents. Roy Lee Ralston II was charged with three counts of aggravated assault against a public servant, a first-degree felony charge, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony charge, and evading arrest with a previous conviction, a state felony. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched at about 2:20 a.m. to a disturbance. Upon arrival, officers were advised that the man involved in the disturbance, identified as Ralston, had left the residence through the back and into the alley. In the alley, MPD officers identified themselves to Ralston before he told officers he wanted them to shoot him while he held an open-bladed knife to his neck, according to the arrest affidavit. Ralston took off running down the alley after officers instructed Ralston to drop the knife. Officers located him in the backyard of a residence where he stated again he wanted officers to shoot him while he was still displaying his knife, according to the arrest affidavit. While attempting to close the distance between them, Ralston jumped on top of a chicken coop and stated for the third time he wanted officers to shoot him. Ralston then proceeded to jump on the roof of the residence. Ralston became irate after officers pointed their flashlights at him, according to the affidavit. He then placed his arm in a throwing motion while holding the knife. According to the affidavit, Ralston attempted to throw the knife at three MPD officers. Officers were able to deploy a less lethal extended impact weapon. Ralston was struck twice, subsequently dropping the knife, according to the arrest affidavit. Ralston is being held in Midland County Jail on a total bond of $45,000. MISD, attack leaves legacy freshman student with puncture wound. Midland ISD reported Friday that a male student reported to the nurse's office at Legacy Freshman High School Friday morning with a puncture wound. EMS was called, however, transport was refused and the student was taken to the ER by his parent, MISD reported. The student received treatment and has been released. MISD added that the student is believed to have received the injury following a verbal back and forth with a female student before the start of school. The female student in question has been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, MISD reported. Midland ISD would like to thank our law enforcement and medical personnel for quickly treating, addressing, and investigating this event. There is no place for violence in our schools, and we will continue to aggressively seek solutions to ensure all campuses are safe and secure environments for learning. Passengers, parking revenue, climb at Midland International. Airline business is booming at Midland International Airport. Passengers are boarding flights on Southwest, United, and American Eagle at nearly 40% increase compared to last year, and it is likely that the 2022 fiscal year will be the second best since at least 2010. The City of Midland reported 52,434 people boarded an airplane during the month of August, pushing the yearly total to 548,987. There is one more month left in the fiscal year. Should passengers continue to travel at their current pace, Midland International will experience its second year with 600,000 or more passengers since at least 2010. The best year in recent memory is 650,056 passengers in fiscal year 2019. Southwest Airlines dominated the percentage of passengers flying out of Midland International in August with 50.6% of the total. United was second with 29.6% of the passenger count. The City of Midland also shows a 36.9% increase in fuel sales and a 60.4% increase in parking revenues this fiscal year. With 1 month to go, the city has collected $5.504 million in net parking revenue. Drilling activity slump ends as rigs rise all around, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity broke out of a three-week slump led by rising activity primarily in the Permian Basin. Oil-filled services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count, which it has issued weekly since the 1940s, rose by four to 763 rigs, reaching its highest level since August. That's 251 rigs, or 49% more than the 512 the company reported this time a year ago. The number of rigs seeking crude oil jumped by eight rigs to 599, 188 more than the 411 reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dropped by four to 162, still 62 more than the 100 counted the previous year. Texas added five rigs for 364, 125 more than the 239 at work statewide last year. New Mexico dropped one rig for 108. Louisiana, one, joined Texas as the only other producing state to add rigs, while North Dakota, one, joined New Mexico as the only other producing state to report a decline. The Permian Basin rose three rigs to 333, 84 more than the 259 in the region a year earlier. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian Basin with 65 rigs, down one for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico remains second with 40 rigs, unchanged for the week. Martin County jumped three rigs to see 35 at work within county lines, while Midland County lost a rig to see 32 for the week. Reeves County had 30 rigs for a second week, and Loving County added a rig for 22. Howard County dropped one rig for 21. Upton County also dropped one rig for 19, followed by Ward County, which reported 15 rigs in a fourth week. Glasscock County dropped one rig for 13. After 2 weeks of inactivity, Dawson County saw the return of drilling activity with one rig for the week. Enverus Foundation, part of the software-as-a-service firm Enverus, reported that, based on weekly peak figures, the U.S. rig count fell by 6 to 852 during the week ended September 14th. The count is flat in the last month and up 37% year over year. The majority of declines occurred outside of major basins. In major play, Appalachia slid by one rig to a total of 57, while the Anadarko Basin and DJ Basin were flat at 77 and 22 rigs. The Permian notched a one-rig increase to 318, while the Gulf Coast and Williston Basin added two rigs each at 117 and 43. As of September 14th, the most active operators in the U.S. are ConocoPhillips, 28 rigs, EOG Resources, 26, Pioneer Natural Resources, 21, Devon Energy, 20, ExxonMobil, 20, and Mewbourne Oil, 20. Conoco and Exxon are both running 12 more rigs than they were a year ago, while EOG has 9 more running. Mewbourne has added 3 additional rigs, while Devon is up 2. Pioneer's drilling program has actually decreased by 1 rig from a year ago. There are 349 distinct operators currently drilling wells in the U.S., compared to 273 on September 14, 2021. Of the total, 16% have added two or more rigs in the last year, and 3% have added four or more rigs. RRC, Drilling Permits Fall, Oil Completions Soar, by Stuart Doreen. While the number of permits to drill has dropped since April, the number of oil completions is up by 67%, according to the Railroad Commission of Texas. The RRC report released the past week showed completion numbers in August reached 708 across the state, up from 423 in April. At the same time, permits to drill a well dropped from 836 to 788 during the same period. The RRC also reported Midland region again dominated statistics in August, accounting for 54.4% of the 788 permits to drill oil and gas wells statewide in August, 59.3% of the 708 new oil completions, and 66.2% of the 148 new gas completions. Statewide, the breakdown of well types for original drilling permits in August 2022 is 194 oil, 88 gas, 556 oil or gas, 18 injection, and 11 other permits, according to the RRC. In August 2022, Commission staff processed 834 oil, 176 gas, and 560 injection completions for new wells, reentries, and recompletions, compared to 649 oil, 109 gas, and 291 injection completions in August 2021, the RRC reported. Total well completions processed for 2022 year-to-date for new drills, re-entries, and recompletions are 8,782 compared to 6,108 recorded during the same period in 2021, according to the RRC. RRC, top Permian counties make up more than 60% of Texas production, by Stuart Doreen. The Permian Basin dominated the Railroad Commission's production statistics released this week for June. The RRC reported that 9 of the top 10 counties for oil production, according to preliminary production numbers, were from the Permian Basin and that they made up 60.11% of the 107.08 barrels produced in Texas. Midland and Martin counties again ranked numbers 1 and 2. They were the only counties with more than 10 million barrels produced. Midland County totaled 16.441 million barrels, 15.3% of the statewide total. The RRC report 12.401 million barrels produced in Martin County. Combined, the neighboring counties collected more than a quarter of the statewide production, 26.9%. In terms of natural gas produced, 6 of the top 10 counties were in the Permian, led by Reeves and Midland. The two counties combined for $139 billion of the 827.921 billion cubic feet produced in June. In June 2021, the preliminary production of crude oil was 107.174 million barrels. The updated total was 120.209 million. During the same month, the preliminary production of gas was 791.989 billion cubic feet. The updated total was 889.128 billion cubic feet. Obituaries. Barbara Moore Davis. Barbara was called to her heavenly home on September 15, 2022, after a brief illness. She was born to Glenn Forrest Long and Ruth Estelle Wood Long on May 20, 1934. Preceded in death by her parents and her son, Randy Moore, she is survived by a sister, Annie Ruth Sims of Comfort, Texas, son Rick and his wife Susan of Midland, daughter Ruslan and her husband David Kosofsky of Everton, Arkansas. She is also survived by 6 grandchildren and 2 great-granddaughters. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to the Salvation Army, Veterans of Foreign Wars, or the River Ministry of Presidio, Texas, through Bellevue Baptist Church in her name. Celebration of Life will be held on Tuesday, September 20th, 2022, at 10 a.m. at Nally Pickle and Welsh Chapel, with burial following at Rest Haven Cemetery. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Billy L. Flanagan, 90, of Stanton, passed away Wednesday, September 14, 2022. Her funeral was held Saturday, September 17, at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Billy was born August 1, 1932, in Oklahoma, Texas, to William Oren and Myrtle Elizabeth Morgan Tucker. She was preceded in death by her husband of nearly 66 years, Curtis, her parents, W.O. and Myrtle Tucker, her brother, DeWitt Tucker, sisters Margie McCormick and Nadine Wilmot, her sister-in-law, Annie Laurie Fox, and grandson, Matthew Cook. She is survived by her son, W. Curtis Flanagan, and wife, Betty of Stanton, 2 daughters, Liz Cook and husband, Mike of Georgetown, Texas, and Leah Flanagan of Stanton. 4 grandchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren. Memorials may be made in Billy's name to the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, www.stjude.org, or to the Martin County Senior Citizen Center, P.O. Box 1233, Stanton, Texas, 79782. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Emily Denise Scully. Emily Denise Scully was born on June 17, 1977, to Vivian Gail Ackerman and Scott Ackerman in Troy, Ohio. Emily was preceded in death by her grandparents. Emily is survived by her sons Dylan and Randall Gawley, her mother Vivian Gail Ackerman, her father Scott Ackerman, sister Melissa Otterstead, and brother Michael Jamie Ackerman. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating to the GoFundMe set up for Dylan and Randall's benefit. Celebration of Life was held at 11 a.m. Monday, September 19th. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Madeline LaMonica. Madeline Carol LaMonica passed away at the age of 66 on September 15, 2022. Madeline is reunited in heaven with her granddaughter Poppy LaMonica and her father Kenneth Oldham. She is survived by her husband of 46 years, Deacon Mike, son Jonah, and granddaughters Ruby, Violet, and Marigold, daughter Nikisha Schmicky, and son-in-law Henry Schmicky, mother Betty Oldham, sisters Paula Watson and Mary Odell, brothers Edward Oldham and Kenneth Oldham, and numerous nieces and nephews. A vigil and funeral was held on Sunday, September 18th. Renee Bayeek. Renee Bayeek passed away on Sunday, August 28, 2022, in Katy, Texas, at the age of 92. Renee Bayeek was born on September 17, 1929, in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, to Joseph Albert Dumayer and Lucienne Racicot. Renee was preceded in death by her husband, Louis-Joseph Bayeek. She is survived by her children, Susana Bayeek of Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, Mark Bayeek and his wife, Kathleen of Houston, Texas, Jean-Michel Bayeek and his wife, Dana of Katy, Texas, Paul Bayeek and his partner, Maria Kursik of Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, and Louis' son, Louis Ferguson, and his wife, Denise, of Aylmer, Quebec, Canada. 12 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Private family services will be held at a later date in Midland, Texas, as well as a celebration of life next summer in Canada. Please, no flowers. Gifts may be given to your local food bank, your local church, or the charity of your choice. Robert W. Lindley. Robert Bobby Lindley, 70, passed away September 4, 2022, at his home in Lubbock, Texas. He was born September 19, 1951. Bobby is survived by his mother, Joyce Lindley, stepchildren Nick Levine and Shauna Shaw, sisters Marcia Hamm and Terry Peters, also three grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his father, Robert H. Lindley, and his older brother, Ronnie Lindley. At Bobby's request, a memorial service will not be held. Those wishing to memorialize Bobby are encouraged to make a donation to Goff Ministries or the American Cancer Society.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading from the Odessa American, Saturday, September 17th. Front page. Abuse Investigations on the Rise by Kim Smith. After dipping during the first year of the pandemic, the number of child abuse investigations rose last year, resulting in more children being removed from their homes. Due to a severe shortage of foster parents, 67% of Midland-Ector County children are now living outside the county. According to the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, the number of child abuse investigations in Ector County dipped from nearly 1,200 in 2019 to 1,060 in 2020, then rose to 1,246 last year. The number of investigations in Midland County rose from 803 in 2019 to 922 in 2020, and then rose even higher to 940 last year. Roughly 300 Midland-Ector County children are in foster care at any given time. But because there are only 63 licensed foster homes in the two counties, 200 of those children are living with relatives or foster parents hundreds of miles from home, according to the state. As the associate judge of the Child Protection Court of West Texas, Tracy Scown, is the judge who ultimately decides if parents can be reunited with their children after successfully completing a case plan created by Child Protective Services. She is also responsible for the well-being of the children while they are in the child welfare system. According to CPS, there are 45 caseworkers overseeing Ector County parents and 14 caseworkers in Midland. Typically, parents have up to a year to complete their case plan, which often includes substance abuse counseling, parenting classes, mental health treatment, and family counseling. Parents who fail can have their parental rights terminated, and their children can be put up for adoption. Statistics obtained from the DFPS through a Texas Public Information Act request show that during 2021, 682 Midland-Ector County children exited DFPS's legal custody, and of those, 34%, or 233, were reunited with their families. The statewide average was just over 27%. Statistics show there is a 4% recidivism rate in both Midland-Ector counties and statewide, meaning children are removed from their parents' homes again. While CPS often tries to work with parents before removing children from their home, they aren't always successful, Scown said. There are also cases in which there's been a death or the abuse and neglect are so severe, the children are removed immediately. According to DPS records, there were two abuse neglect-related deaths in Midland-Ector counties for fiscal year 2021. There were four for fiscal year 2019 and five for fiscal year 2020. Leaving home. No matter the circumstance, it's emotionally devastating for the children and even more traumatic when they have to leave the area, Scown said. When you think about it, it's like we have to ask them to write down your favorite person in the world, write down your favorite animals, your favorite pet, write down your favorite toy, write down your favorite room, write down your favorite place to go, and then ask them which one they want to keep, Scown said. We tell them, you get to stay with this person, but you're going to lose your school and you're going to lose your toys and you're going to lose all your friends, or you can have your friend, but you're going to lose this, you're going to lose this, and you're going to lose this. The negative impact on their schooling is also dramatic, she said. Since every school prepares for the Texas assessments of academic readiness their own way, students can find themselves falling behind quickly. Adults may understand and rationalize why these things are happening, but children certainly can't, Scown said. Being placed outside of the county also poses a huge problem when parents are trying to maintain a bond with their children and practicing new parenting and coping skills, she said. They're only able to speak with their kids on the phone or virtually, and that's really tough when you have a baby or a three-year-old who doesn't want to sit there and look at a computer and talk to mom or dad through a computer, Scown said. Some might think that would give parents an added incentive to work harder, but it just ends up adding to their frustration level, the judge said. Finding foster families for these children is difficult for a number of reasons, she said. While CPS would prefer to place children with family members, many folks have left their extended families behind in other states to work in the oil fields. In addition, some family members may not be willing to take on the responsibility of more children, especially if there are a large number of siblings. There are also times when family members simply aren't appropriate placements because of their own legal or substance abuse issues, Scown said. Splitting up siblings comes with its own set of problems, she said. Unfortunately, especially in cases of neglect, the eldest child has become the mother figure, the parent or the parent figure for the younger children, Scown said. We don't want that older child to have to continue to do that, but when we have to separate them, they often feel like they're losing their identity, so that's very difficult as well. Per capita, CPS investigates more child abuse cases in Ector County than Midland County, 22.2% per 1,000 residents compared to 17.2%, DFPS statistics show. While we don't speculate on these statistical differences between communities, we do understand that child abuse neglect occurs where families struggle with issues such as poverty, substance abuse, and mental health issues, said DFPS spokesperson Paul Zimmerman. Zimmerman said there are 24 investigators in Ector County and 11 in Midland. According to CPS statistics, the vast majority of allegations pertain to neglect. Most involve a failure to supervise children. But there's also physical and medical neglect. Physical and sexual abuse round out the top three reasons parents are investigated. The judge said substance abuse is a huge issue, particularly methamphetamine. Some start out using stimulants to stay awake at work and find themselves addicted. Others start out using drugs recreationally. You have parents that think it's okay to use drugs as long as they're not around their child. They don't realize that once they do use the drug, they don't have the judgment to not go around their child, Scown said. Many times, the parents were abused themselves, she said. The goal. Under Texas law, those in the child welfare system are required to help parents reunite with their children. And Scown said families in Ector County are fortunate in that there are several agencies that offer a wide range of services. Parents can overcome their addictions, heal, and become the parents their children need if they work hard and take advantage of the services offered, she said. It's amazing that we have such good services, Scown said. We don't give a lot of credit, and I spend a lot of my time actually going out in the community, finding out what's available that may or may not be actually contracted with DFPS. Because DFPS has contracts, and that's who they can pay for services through. But we actually have a lot of other services available in the community that are available to parents. They might have to pay, or they have sliding scales, or there are actually free resources for people. The Permian Basin Regional Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse is just one such agency, Scown said. Scown attempts to meet with the parents, children, foster parents, case managers, and court-appointed special advocates at least once every 3 months. The legislature has set up a lot of checkpoints during the case just to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do to get toward the end of the case. So CPS is providing the services. Are the parents doing the services? If they're not, why not? Is the child getting medical, dental? If you add that to the caseload of the district judges, it's overwhelming. So CPC judges were set up to take care of those details along the way, Scown said. Child protection court judges receive specialized training, she said. Our training is very specific toward trauma-based care, toward education, toward services, toward drug addiction, domestic violence, all of this that we see in our court. Hopefully that gives CPC judges insight in how to direct the courtroom, Scown said. If at all possible, Scown tries to see families more frequently than every 3 months. We recognize that the faster a child is in a permanent place, the better for the child. This system is set up to get them to a permanent place as quickly as possible, whether that be returned home safely or to an adoptive placement. Children that stay in foster care for a long time are at much higher risk, Scown said. Ramifications. According to the Centers for Disease Control, child abuse and neglect can have long-term impacts on children that require early intervention. These children are also at increased risk of experiencing future violence victimization and perpetration and substance abuse. Chronic abuse can result in changes in their brain development and increase their chances of developing PTSD and learning, attention, or memory difficulties. It can also have a lifelong impact of children's immune and metabolic systems, according to the CDC. Studies have also shown that abuse and neglected children can trigger the part of their brains that control the fight, flight, or freeze response, which makes it harder for them to control their emotions. According to experts, however, children can overcome adverse childhood experiences if they receive therapy and are surrounded by caring adults who support their needs. While the hearings are often difficult for all involved, Scown said she tries to be encouraging and non-judgmental. Some of the training I've had is that these parents have reached the point they've reached because they've been told again and again and again that there's something wrong with them, that they're not good, that they're bad. So I want to encourage positive behavior and healing, Scown said. While the area has a great number of resources for families, Scown said she is always on the hunt for more because sometimes the CPS-approved agencies have waiting lists or schedules that don't mesh with the parents. I don't require that they go specifically to the ones that are paid by CPS as long as we're meeting the goal, Scown said. Many of the agencies she finds operate on a sliding fee schedule, she said. Zimmerman said the Permian Basin area is doing well with available parenting classes and pediatricians. There is a short waiting list for drug rehabilitation services, while our biggest need is for more trauma-informed therapists for children and families, Zimmerman said. No matter what has taken place before, most children want to go home, Scown said. When you look at how much the child loves the parent, then you can start seeing how having a healthy parent is really the best thing. If we can get that parent healthy, that's the best thing. But I want to see everybody healthy, regardless, Scown said. I always say, I'm not just doing this because I want your family reunified. I want you to have a better life. What's the best part of her job? Seeing people heal, seeing families in a better place, seeing children in a better place, whether that is back with their parent or in a new place, Scown said. Scown often visits community groups to recruit potential foster families. While she understands many fear becoming too attached to the children, she puts it this way. If you found a child on the beach and you didn't know where its parent was, but it needed taking care of, and you took care of it for 6 months, and then you found out its mom had fallen and almost drowned and had been in the hospital for 6 months, but is healed now and ready to have her child come home, would you not want her to have her child back?
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.